This week is Indigenous Sovereignty Week. Communities across the country are holding events, panel discussions, film screenings, and peaceful demonstrations in the hopes of building community and advocating for the rights of First Nations people. The Conservative government hopes to eliminate historic poverty on reserved lands and has proposed changes to land use rules in an attempt to boost corporate investment. Paula Pounder is the chair in Indigenous governance and associate professor in the Department of Politics and Public Administration at Ryerson University. She's participating in a panel discussion tonight that's happening here at the University of Toronto's Hart House. She joins us on the line now from Toronto this morning to talk about the conversion of reserve lands into fee simple lands, as well as what that effect might be on the Indigenous community. Good morning, Pamela.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Appreciate you doing this. Explain, I'm a little confused as well. What is this idea behind this? What is fee simple land, and how is that different from what we currently have as reserve lands?
Well, fee simple lands is a legal term for how many Canadians hold their property. So the title to their land, fee simple, essentially means that they own it to the exclusion of everyone else. It can still be expropriated by the federal or provincial government in certain circumstances, but for all intents and purposes, it's their land. They can sell it, they can mortgage their house, they can do what they want with it, subject to, of course, zoning bylaws and that kind of thing. Whereas on reserve land, the lands are held communally, so they're for the benefit of the entire band or First Nation. But there are provisions under the Indian Act whereby individuals can hold smaller pockets of land for themselves, so to the exclusion of all other people. They can obtain mortgages for their homes. That's a common misconception. It's just the process by which they do it is a little different. It's done in conjunction with the federal government. And they can build homes, they can make improvements to their homes, and their lands can be expropriated by the federal or provincial government under certain circumstances in the same way as people who hold fee simple title are under that kind of condition. So in practical terms, there's not much of a difference between, you know, certificate of possession, which recognizes those individual lands on reserve, and fee simple. It's more about how the concern seems to be more about those who are interested in economic development. How soon can they sell their lands? How soon can they surrender their lands for leasing purposes and that kind of thing?
And speaking of that, like, how would that affect Indigenous communities on the reserves if you can just sell your land and not have it owned or communally by everyone?
Well, and that's the biggest concern that I have and a lot of community members have. Right now, the debate is pretty much just being held amongst, you know, some academics and some Indigenous leaders, but not really at the community level. And these are the very questions that community members want to know. If the lands were all issued out in fee simple, so say you had a reserve of 300 people and they each had their own certificate of possession, or I guess fee simple lands that they could sell to non-Indians if they wanted to, I'm wondering how long it would take for all of those lands to be sold, especially for those First Nations who have a higher degree of poverty. So in that way, I have to wonder whether selling off reserve lands to non-Indians is really promoting Indigenous sovereignty or speeding up assimilation.
Interesting question. A few months ago, the government ordered a study of Canada's most economically successful First Nations communities. They found that most of them are in southern Ontario, where they've let businesses like golf courses, casinos, condo development in. Is that the kind of thing that you're afraid of? Is that what you're referencing there, that a conversion to that type of fee simple land would perpetuate that kind of investment?
Well, the interesting thing about that study is that they were looking at the most successful, well, what they deemed to be the most successful First Nations, and they obtained, the majority of them obtained their success under the Indian Act. That's not to say that the Indian Act is the solution. There's a lot of problems and it needs to be replaced with something else, but they have been successful, as have been the wealthiest bands in BC, by using the Indian Act provisions. So I'm not, and I'm certainly not against economic development, but I think what community members are asking is, how can we live in balance? How can you ensure that there will be land for our communal interests without selling it all to Walmart, for example?
And what do you think would be this balance? What kind of investment would you like to see on First Nations communities?
Well, I personally don't think that there's any requirement for First Nations to sell all their lands to non-Indians and non-Indian corporations in order to address issues around poverty. Economic development can and does happen on reserve. Economic development can and does happen in self-governing communities. So the requirement that they be in fee simple is simply a matter of it's serving someone else's interest, not First Nations interest. And I just think that people need to be very cognizant of the details. So we're talking about, you know, whether we're pro privatization or not, but then look at the actual plan. So what they're planning is that, for example, everyone who has a certificate of possession on a reserve, that would be transferred into fee simple title. Well, as you probably know, there's lots of people who don't have certificates of possession. So what happens to those people? What about 50% of the Indigenous population that live off reserve? What would be their interest? So there's a lot more details that have to be worked out before this could be given any serious kind of consideration. And if you look at the fact that this idea comes from Tom Flanagan, not that you should discount an idea because it comes from an individual, but you have to look at their intention. In every book he's ever written, his intention is for the assimilation of Aboriginal people. So then you have to look at, well, what would be the intention of this idea? He bases it on Hernando de Soto's ideas about, you know, selling off communally owned land. But if you look at the research around the world says that for Indigenous people and poor people, that doesn't work. What happens is they lose their land in sales to non-Indians, and then they're in a worse position than they were before fee simple happened.
Well, and in fact, in that very study that we were talking about, one of the First Nations communities that made the top 65 list of so-called successful reserves doesn't have safe tap water, and the majority of residents have to drink bottled water. So, I mean, yeah. It also begs the question then, what is a measure of success? I mean, is that a sign of how desperate the situation is on reserves? I mean, is the government holding the bar too low for what constitutes a success?
Yeah, exactly. What factors are you looking at? Are you looking at only how much money they're bringing in from their economic development projects versus looking at the whole picture? How much are they in debt for all of these mortgages and infrastructure that they had to have for the economic development that nobody is looking at? And there's lots of research out there to suggest that the happiest First Nations, the healthiest, those with the lowest suicide rates, are those that have a combination of factors. So they're already well on the way to self-government. They have cultural and language revitalization. They have community healing projects, that kind of thing. You don't see economic development on that list. So when we're talking about what is success, for me, success is about being living in balance, being happy and healthy, and providing a secure and safe future for our future generations, which can include economic development, but I don't think it's exclusively economic development.
What is the premise of the panel discussion tonight? What sort of issues will you be looking at in the other discussions?
Well, I think there's a whole range of issues. One, what is the plan itself? What is Flanagan's book actually promoting? And then what are the pros and cons of that? And then what needs to happen? So if we've identified an issue that is very difficult to deal with economic development under the Indian Act, then what are some options? Are the only options to have fee simple on reserve lands? And then what would that mean? It's really about getting people to engage in the debate, to get all of the facts so that they are empowered to have a voice in whether this is part of their future or not.
Well, we've linked information about the discussion tonight, as well as your blog and your website, information about your website and your blog to ours, ciut.fm. I appreciate you talking to us. Look forward to the discussion tonight.
Thanks again for having me.
Professor Pamela Pometer is the chair in Indigenous Governance and an associate professor, rather, in the Department of Politics and Public Administration at Ryerson University. She's participating in a panel discussion tonight here at U of T's Hart House, talking about this is part of Indigenous Sovereignty Week. And we'll be discussing, as she said, this idea of converting reserve lands into fee simple lands, as well as what the effects might be.